Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 122 with Dr. Randall Sampson. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Dr. Randall Sampson, we explore a number of interesting topics like the six pillars of growth. We dig into his new book, Welcome to the Grind, how process times relationships equals exponential results, and different leadership lessons learned from the Texas football head coach Herman. Thanks for spending some time with me and listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the content, I would like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. I'd like to share an amazing free resource for all listeners of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. It's the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017. And that's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. And just like the title says, you get the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. But hey there, Better Leaders. I am here with Dr. Randall Sampson, who ensures equity and access for students through innovative learning models. Dr. Sampson has experience at the K-12 secondary education level as an administrator, teacher, and a national transformation specialist. Dr. Randall Sampson's focus areas include closing achievement gaps through the implementation and coaching of rigorous Common Core state standards, systemically increasing college and career readiness, boosting graduation rates, implementing innovation learning pathways, and building public-private partnerships through our community engagement process. These are skill sets Dr. Sampson honed through the Harvard University Achievement Gap Initiative and through teacher quality research with Harvard University's Dr. Ronald F. Ferguson. As a practitioner, Dr. Sampson's analysis of students' performance data provided a national value-add approach to building sustainable learning environments. Dr. Sampson, thank you for joining me on the show.
Oh, I appreciate being here. Thank you.
Well, let's start with what inspired you to pursue a career in education.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny story. It's one of those where I played sports in college. And so we had some really great coaches when I grew up from college to high school to elementary school. And so that mentorship was always there. And I always felt connected to that. So the ability to coach up other kids in sports and in life was really a passion. And then I took the education route because that's the ability to have direct contact and really provide that mentorship for kids. The academic content's important, but the relationship and the mentorship is just as important for young learners and for young kids. So that's really what motivated me to get into education, is that ability to connect with kids and provide them with the best opportunities possible to be successful in whatever they chose.
Dr. Sampson, how would you describe your leadership style? How'd you develop it?
You know, leadership is one of those things where you can't walk around with a badge on and say, I'm the leader. Because if you have to declare that you're leader,
that's
you're
what my
really
badge says,
leader.
Though.
When you have to walk around and tell people all the time, hey, I'm the leader, you know, people just kind of look at you like, okay. So people really want a leader that's a doer and somebody that's there in the trenches with them, somebody that's there for them, and somebody that actually walks the talk as well. So my leadership style has been honed over time. It's not some one thing I think that I learned in college or one thing that I learned on the job. I think it's a combination of things over time, being mentored by great leaders, and also seeing some folks who were not great leaders, what happened to them and where they fell short, and just kind of developing myself that way over time. And my leadership style is more of a trying to be as transformative as possible and empower people. I don't want to take the credit for everything because we're a team. So I really want to empower people to take the pathway that they believe will help them out best, and then providing them resources to say, hey, here are some practice resources, things that are proven. If you want to try these out, go ahead. And some of these things you might not want to try out. And, you know, you let me know what you want to try and how I can help to develop you over time. And that's kind of my leadership philosophy and how I see myself as a leader.
Do you have a specific story where you can take us to a moment where you were in the trenches with your people?
Oh, yeah. I tell you, one of the best moments, and this is a story that nobody really knows about. One of the best moments is I took a group of teachers to an achievement gap initiative at Harvard. And it was probably one of the best moments ever because we went as a group. There were about six or seven of us that went. And so we went to the conference, and there were people from Britain, people from around the world and around the country at the conference. And we actually had an opportunity to sit down with our school's data about our achievement gap. And the team actually created something, whether it was right or wrong, it was something that they thought that they could accomplish. And the team of teachers thought, if we created these plans and implemented them with fidelity, we can actually make a difference in the lives of kids. And it wasn't anything specific that the conference told us we had to do, any strategies that they told us we had to do. The team just kind of came up with these strategies, looked at the data, looked at our performance, and said, look, we can do something about this based on the data that was specific to our kids and our building and our community. And we actually did it and saw some great results. So that was the conference part that really stood out to me as far as being in the trenches. But then the best part about the conference was after the meeting, where you're hanging out with your colleagues and you're just having fun. You're going to grab some pizza. We were in Boston, so we went bowling. We did the duck tours. We did the tour of the city. Just the bonding and the relationship and the ability for somebody to know that they can trust you in a setting that's not a school or professional setting, just a general life setting, for somebody to say, hey, you know what? I can trust you with my life. I can trust you with everything that I have. And everything was real relaxed and it was real laid back. And I think that was probably one of the best experiences I've ever had. And it's the ability just to connect with a team of people at a personal level and also pledge to do something on a professional level and actually do it after the conference.
Well, Dr. Sampson, you know I love to hear about what makes you great as a leader, like just what you shared there about getting in the trenches with your people. But I also love to learn from leadership mistakes. You know, I think those moments of failure and the lessons learned are such a powerful lesson to be learned. And I love sharing those with the Better Leader listeners. So can you take us to a moment where you made your worst leadership mistake and share what you learned during that time?
Yeah, absolutely. And I hate to admit it, but I think I had quite a few leadership mistakes over time. And I think that's part of the growing process. So for me, one of the biggest mistakes that I believe I made was when I was a teacher trying to become a school leader, going through the leadership process. And it was probably one of the biggest mistakes, and I learned from it. And that was the ability to actually listen to your student. I had a student, and he was one of those kids where he was constantly in trouble, constantly pushing the buttons, constantly pushing the system. And I didn't listen to him. And I was determined that I was going to have it my way as the teacher leader, as the adult, to kind of demonstrate to other people that I can lead, I can handle a kid, right? And so I did not listen to him. And it got to the point where one day the kid just kind of broke down and cried and said, you know, hey, I'm a middle school kid, and why don't you want to listen to me, what I have to say? And that moment right there, seeing that kid's eyes welt up, did something for me to where I always made a pledge that I would listen to any kid, right or wrong, or whatever the case is. I would always listen. I would always take that moment to step back and let the kid express how he or she feels before jumping to judgment or before moving into into some kind of action.
So during our pre-chat, Dr. Sampson, we were talking about these six pillars of growth. They're pillars that are time-tested. They're proven to always be there. It's not a fad. These things are not coming and going. Can you dig into the six pillars of growth and unpack those for our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, over time, I've kind of thought about this as a leader, as growing as a professional and growing personally. What would really make a difference? And we'll have blended learning come and go. We'll have project-based learning, inquiry-based learning, all of these components of learning that schools gravitate towards. But what really drives them? So I kind of come up with these six pillars. So making sure that an initiative is job embedded, that's the number one pillar. Making sure that things are job embedded. If I can't do it on the job and learn it and practice it on the job, theory is not going to cut it for a practitioner who's out in the field trying to actually get things accomplished. And then the second pillar is this whole concept of being goal-oriented. Sometimes we jump into initiatives because it sounds cool or we're emotionally driven to that initiative, and we really don't have any goals that are tied to this specific initiative. So making sure that everything that we're doing is goal-oriented. Do we want to grow by X amount? Do we want to see some level of movement or engagement or whatever we believe the goal is for our community? We need to make sure that everything's goal-oriented. And then the third pillar that is really starting to resonate now, in my opinion, is this whole notion of being self-directed. And that's coming through the implementation of technology or the blended learning space. The ability for learners to be self-directed in their growth is a big opportunity, because typically we have the teacher directing the instruction or the learning task or the level of growth that they want to see from the kid or the learner. But in this instance, the pillar really wants there to be a level of self-directed growth from the learner, and giving the learner the opportunity to tinker and to create and to analyze and synthesize the learning experience. And then the fourth pillar is this pillar of being collaborative. I've never heard people complain that we are collaborating too much, and especially in K-12. We have these silos of practice that we're constantly trying to overcome. So being very purposeful and being a collaborative leader, being a collaborative practitioner, being a collaborative learner, these are very purposeful things that you have to do. Else it's easier just to do things in isolation and tell everybody else to do it, or just to forge ahead by yourself and tell everybody else to do it, versus collaborating with your colleagues, with other learners, with your community members. That's a very paramount for that pillar. And then the fifth pillar, this is really a heated one for me. And it's really starting to pick up some heat now, right? And I'm noticing it as people out on Twitter and social media, they're really starting to pick up on this a little bit, and it's data-driven. You know, some people are saying data-driven, that's the dumbest slogan ever, or we're not data-driven. We shouldn't be worried about numbers when we're talking about kids. But then I kind of push back in this, because everything we do as a society has a data-driven element to it. It's not the only element, it's one of the elements. That's why it's one of the pillars, right? So when we decided that we're going to go land on the moon, somebody had come up with the math and the figures and the data to figure out how to get there and back safely. Everything we do, from watching football, I'm here in Columbus, Ohio, and football is king with The Ohio State University. And I have not seen, as of yet, 105,000 people go into the stadium every Saturday and say, hey, you know what? We're playing University of Michigan. Let's just turn the scoreboard off. We don't need to know how many yards we're rushing for. We don't need to keep track of the touch. No, nobody says that. Everybody says, hey, look at our yards. Look at our passes. Look at how much we're tackling, all the other stuff that's measured. So I think it's a farce to say that data-driven is a bad thing for schools. And for me personally, we're talking about achievement gap. And on average, African-American students graduate 12th grade with their white peers, and African-American students are reading at an eighth grade reading level. We cannot ignore that level of data. That's malpractice. So we have 12th grade African-American students graduating from high school at an eighth grade reading level compared to their white peers who are graduating 12th grade at a 12th grade reading level. So once we start to turn a blind eye to that level of data, then we lose touch as to what the issues are, what the problems are, and how to actually come up with viable solutions that are measurable. So that's kind of my push on that data-driven pillar, because I feel it's starting to percolate up a little bit in the K-12 world where people are starting to push back against data. And data doesn't always have to be, my defense of data, it doesn't always have to be numbers. It doesn't always have to be test scores. I find data in the authentic stories that are happening every day. So the ability to capture, curate, and share what's happening in the classroom using social media, that's a form of data. Storytelling about your experience, that's a form of data. We just have to redefine data and make it work for us and make it as authentic as possible. And it doesn't always have to be just numbers in a ledger somewhere. And so the sixth pillar, and for me, I think it's the most important pillar, and it's one of my favorite, is student-centered. That's always going to be a pillar, regardless of what we do, how we change education. If the student and the student experience is not at the center of what we're doing, then we shouldn't be doing it. So student-centered is all about the authentic engagement of kids. You know, what's best for them? And sometimes we get it kind of confused because we say, okay, well, why don't we have our kid tell us what they want to do? Yeah, that sounds great, but at times, you know, they're kids, so they really don't know. And if it were up to my young kids that I have, my own personal kids, we'd eat ice cream every day, right?
You'd be a very popular person.
Yeah, man. So they just want to eat ice cream every day.
Right.
And I could say, okay, I'm student-centered. That's what you want to do. Let's eat ice cream every day, right? And you know and I know that that's not the best option. So we have to kind of mix some vitamins and fruit and vegetables and grains in there because we know in the long run that that's the right thing to do. So the student-centered piece is really giving the learners a voice that's reasonable and then also being able to push back and say, hey, I know this is what you say you want to do. Have you thought about these options? Now you're giving them choice in that as well, regardless of whatever the initiative is. So we're really allowing kids to have voice in that, but also giving them some viable options and choices when they have that voice, and also giving them the ability to think about their choices and to really analyze their choices and really deep dive their choices. And the choices can't just be based on my personal ideology, right? So you kind of have to look at the data and examine these things and make a choice based off of good information. So these are the six pillars of growth that I've kind of put together, and I hold these up for any school, any district, any leader, any student, any community to really use and say, okay, if we're going to go down the road of our initiative, if our initiative is spaghetti counting. Is spaghetti counting going to be job embedded? Are we going to have a goal with spaghetti counting? Who's going to be self-directed in spaghetti counting? How are we going to collaborate with this stuff? What data are we going to gather about spaghetti counting? And is spaghetti counting really important for kids? Is it something that's going to be student-centered? So you can use these pillars for anything, you know, especially here with my fictitious example about spaghetti counting. And hey, we might be starting a new trend, right? Spaghetti counting.
You never know. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. Yeah, so the listeners, the six pillars of growth: job embedded, goal oriented, self directed, being collaborative, data driven, and student centered. And you could dig deeper into all those pillars of growth in Dr. Sampson's new book, Welcome to the Grind. Dr. Sampson, what motivated you to write this book, Welcome to the Grind?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where people say all the time, you know, hey, I'm grinding at work or I'm grinding in life or whatever the case is. And K-12 is, as I tell people all the time, K-12 is a grind. And they're the elite few, and we call them teachers, and they embrace this grind. So K-12 teachers really embrace the grind. They do a great job with it. And for the average person that does not understand what happens in a school, the K-12 school teacher is in a deep grind, and the book really details some of that, captures the great stories that's happening out there in K-12 world. But the grind is real. And I tell people all the time, when you walk into a K-12 setting, it's like walking into a crock pot the first day of school, right? It's like a crock pot. Feels good, feels comfortable. And you got 180 days of school. By the time day 179 rolls around, the meat is falling off of your bones, man. And you are
tenderized. There's no meat left.
Yeah. You are tenderized. So it's a grind. And the really great folks out there who are educators do a good job with it. And I really appreciate them. And I had an opportunity to hang out with a guy by the name of Tom Herman. And he has to be one of the greatest young leaders at this moment in time. Coach Herman is the head football coach at the University of Texas. So in the book, I kind of document my 3 years spent with him. And over time, since he was the offensive coordinator at Ohio State University when they won the national championship, to his rise as a head coach at the University of Houston, and now at the pinnacle of college football with the University of Texas. But Coach Herman always has the saying, nobody cares what you did yesterday. Work harder today. It's a grind. If you don't work for your brothers, the people that you work with who are out in the trenches with, nobody cares. You can't play for people in the stands. You can't play for your mom or dad. It's all about the people that you're with on a day-to-day basis. So I had an opportunity over 3 years just to kind of capture his story and had an opportunity to kind of learn from him. And the thing that really changed my leadership style over time was his main process, that is process times relationship equals exponential results. He told me that, and it changed the entire way of how one tried. And Coach Herman is a Mensa member. So he's like the top 2% smartest in the world. So he's a certified Mensa member, and he keeps everything very simple and very logical. So the ability to have a process times relationships, being a multiplier of relationships is really the key that he told me to gain these exponential results. Because the problem is we always see a great principal make really good gains in their building, and then they move to office and get a promotion. And then the building that they came from kind of goes back to status quo after that or leaves. But what you want to do is you want to build exponential results, regardless if you want to be in the building or in that position. And if you move on, the results will continue to grow because you have a great process in place and the relationships are really, really tight.
Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls. There's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcast. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com. Yeah, what I hear you saying there is the importance of systems, right? So that when you do move on, every leader is going to say yes to another position, that the school or the organization isn't, left in dire straits. And if you've been smart, if you've been documenting everything you've been doing and how you've been doing it with directions, and these systems, they can be in documents and spreadsheets and videos and how you develop your people too. But that moment that you step out, if the school seems lost, like what have you really done? You may have led well for some time during your tenure, but if the work ends when you end, what's the point, you know?
Absolutely. Because the kids are going to keep coming. The kids are from different levels. Kids will keep coming through the system.
Sure.
And the system has to be able to function and function exponentially for those kids, even in your absence. And that's one of the things that I learned from Coach Herman was this whole concept that culture trumps everything. So building a culture of winning over scheme, right? Because we'll tweak things in our schemes here and there. We'll tweak our schedule. We'll tweak the books that we offer kids and materials and resources. We'll tweak our FTE, full-time equivalent of teachers. We'll tweak the lunch schedules, the lunch, all that other kind of stuff. But the culture of the organization has to be fertile. So culture over scheme any day. And Coach Herman is one of the top schematic leaders out there as far as college football is concerned. And he kind of puts that to the side and he really dives into the culture, developing his people, empowering his people, empowering his team. And what I learned from him as far as this leadership piece about empowering, as you are becoming the principal or the superintendent or the CEO of your organization, and he's the CEO of the football team, the empowerment really goes to a different level because he has to engage with all of his coaches. That 45-year-old man that has been around to different colleges, different universities with different coaches, he has to engage that 45-year-old man and reinvigorate that 45-year-old man who's been in the game for 20 years now. So he has to figure that out. He has to engage with that person's family. He engages with that person's kids. He has to engage with the front office staff, the equipment managers, the videographers, the university presidents, all the way up and down the line. His role is to engage and maximize the culture for everybody so that they can feel, I don't want to say important, but that they own the vision and the mission alongside him, and they can actually become contributors to the vision and mission rather than just passive taking direction from him.
You know, that's a really good point, what Coach Herman does. And it reminds me of Paulo Freire and the Pedagogy of the Oppressed, just, you know, messing with this idea of a banking model of education where students are just containers that we're filling up with our knowledge and expertise, as opposed to helping them become active owners and change agents of their own communities. And that's what I hear you saying, you know, just getting people involved, empowering, distributing leadership and ownership so that the change really takes root in the person's core.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the great points that I picked up from him. So, you know, it's one thing when people talk about the theory behind their leadership, right? But then to actually see it unfold and see it in action. And in the book, I kind of dig down into this whole phenomenon that Ohio State had. They're down to their third string quarterback. And on most teams, when you're down to your third string quarterback, it's just some kid that's chewing bubble gum and holding on to the clipboard and not very engaged in the game at all. So in the testament to Coach Herman, when he was the coordinator and the quarterback coach, he engaged and involved himself with every person on his unit, regardless of rank or position. So if you're the first team quarterback, he dove into you as much as possible. And if you're the third team or fourth team quarterback, he gave just as much energy for those kids as well. And then it paid off dividends because Ohio State was stuck with a third team quarterback that had to go in and save the day. And the kid, Cardell Jones, did a phenomenal job. And then even in the book, I kind of document that relationship. And Cardell ended up graduating from The Ohio State University. And he's the first person in his family to hold a college degree. And Coach Herman just didn't dive into this kid's athletic life, but personally as well. He served as a great mentor for the kid. And when you look at Coach Herman's track record as an offense coordinator and his quarterbacks, he has 100% graduation rate for African-American athletes from The Ohio State University. That's impressive, right? So you look at the data nationally for graduation rates at the collegial level, and he's at 100% rate for his players. I mean, that's that's what it's all about, you know, changing the metric for the livelihoods of kids. And it doesn't matter where you came from. It's about where you want to go and how to actually help that kid get to where they want to get. I think that is, that's impressive. That's the big part.
I don't know about you, but I had enough on my plate just thinking about how to operate a building and how to develop my people. That was enough. And that doesn't even include parents. That doesn't even include student issues. And it definitely doesn't include where am I going to find the funding to run all the great programs my students deserve. Well, the great news is I have an amazing free resource for you, the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017. That's available at schoolzonepodcast.com. In this guide, you will be exposed to the best fundraising ideas for schools in 2017. And my favorite company that's described in the guide is School Spirit Vending. The reason School Spirit Vending rises above the rest is because they make fundraising so incredibly hassle-free. What if a company would come in, install vending machines with customized stickers? That's right, stickers that had your logo, that had your mascot, that had whatever you and your students wanted installed. They come in, they take care of the machines. You do no work besides having the machines installed in the school, and you get a cut of the profit. That's where you're going to find money to actually run these programs. So check out the Top 10 School Fundraising Ideas for 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com and definitely give School Spirit Vending a call. Tell them Danny Sunshine sent you. So knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
Oh, I tell you what, as a novice principal heading in, the number one thing that I would tell myself is culture wins all day long. Getting the culture right. Yeah, you might know how to manipulate the schedule. Yes, you might know some things about the curriculum, but the ability to have a culture where people are empowered and they feel connected to the goals, they feel connected to the vision. They actually feel like they can do something and that they can drive this train in spite of you being there, or even if, you know, for whatever reason, you get a promotion. I think that's the biggest compliment for any principal going in, is the ability for the staff to be empowered and say, hey, you know what? We actually feel like we can do something here, something positive, right? Because it can go the other way, too. You don't want people to be reckless with the power. So we want to build something great and really have people take off from there. The ability to be self-disciplined and building a culture of relentless effort. That is for me, that's going to be a key component going in if you're a new administrator, because the culture will dictate what your priorities are. And I tell people that all the time. For teachers who are not buying into the culture, eventually it will get to the parents, it will get to the community, it will get to your colleagues, and it will show these are your priorities. Our priority is our kids being student-centered, making sure that every kid has opportunity. And if our culture does not reflect that, that shows clearly where your priorities are as a professional.
Do you have any stories or a strategy you can share with the listeners that will help them understand how to build a winning culture?
Yeah. So I have this. I had a teacher that came in to me. He was just irate. And it was during this entire time of zero tolerance, when everybody was really hypervigilant about zero tolerance. And so the teacher comes in and had the kid with him and said, I will not be threatened by clothing that a kid wears. And I said, well, what's the issue? Said, well, the kid is wearing threatening clothing, and it has violence written on it, and that's not our culture. And I said, okay, well, bring the kid in. Let's see what it says. And he said, yeah, the shirt that the kid has on says gun it. And we don't tolerate guns in our school. And so I said, okay, let's just think about it for a second. Kid comes in, and I asked the teacher to step out. And so I tell the kids, show me your shirt. What's going on? He said, I don't know. It's my shirt. And I read the shirt and it hit me. The shirt said G Unit.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. And the teacher read it as Gun It, right? And that's when I knew we needed to change the culture about how we perceive kids, because our teachers were so, some of our teachers were so disconnected with the everyday culture that our kids are coming from.
Oh my gosh.
And so from that point, we created a song list, right? So we asked the kids, we said, okay, in the mornings when you guys come to school, we want to have some music playing in the hallways over loudspeakers. What music would you like to listen to in the morning that's appropriate, that would introduce a typical teacher to your culture? And when I say your culture, I'm talking about youth culture, hip-hop, or whatever the music is, the trends are that kids are listening to. And so kids created a playlist of music, whether it was reggae, country, rock and roll, rap, whatever it was. And that provided some context for our teachers. And we also flipped the script. We also asked teachers, hey, what do you want to listen to? And obviously, you know, the kids were moaning and groaning about that because we're listening to Frank Sinatra and, you know, stuff like that, that teachers created on their playlist. But it gave an opportunity for the adults and the students to interact with each other. And before school, the kids would gather in the hallways and we would ask the adults to go out there and have conversations with the kids and ask them, what's this music? What's the stuff that you're listening to and how does that play out for you in your everyday? So that kind of changed the culture about how we do things. And even here in Ohio, like I said before, you know, football's king. So the week of Ohio State and Michigan is always, you know, every person in every school wears their Ohio State gear the entire week. And the kids wanted to play Ohio State music in between class changes. And they were doing the OHIO chants and high-fiving teachers, that kind of stuff. And one teacher made the comment, said, are we here to be entertaining kids or are we here for them to be taught? And that showed me where her priorities were as a teacher, where engagement with students was at the bottom of her rung. And so we changed the culture once again and continue to have this level of engagement with kids and just having a conversation, a purposeful conversation with them about this. And to the point where we even built at this district that I was working with, we built the first NHS for the middle school level. Because the district did not have a national honor society at the middle level. And this is one of the largest school districts in the state of Ohio. And so we kind of built that and built that culture to where we would listen to kids.
Mm. Well, that's a really timely comment, and I appreciate you taking the time to unpack the story so that leaders can see, you know, a very real thing they can do to build culture. You don't know this, but, you know, just an hour ago, I recorded episode 121. This is episode 122. And I connected with Dr. Amante from the Disruptive Equity Education Project. And she does all sorts of work revolved around equity. And we were talking about what do you do when the teachers, the leaders don't reflect and don't look like the kids that they serve. And so I'm taking a wild guess here, but I'm guessing there was that the teacher didn't look like his kid or her kid. I could be wrong, probably not. But to think that it said Gun It as opposed to G Unit, you know, maybe it was a generational thing, but it's probably a race thing. You know, you need as a leader to then provide the space and the direction and build the culture of how we're going to talk about and do these things. So introducing the music. And I think it was a brilliant leadership move as well to include the faculty, what they would like to hear also, because it connected the staff with the students. Really appreciate that story.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're 100% right. It was a generational gap. And I'm sure there was a tinge of an issue with race as well, where you're just not connecting because that's not your culture, right? So, and clearly, the faculty member didn't look like the student, and the minority student is the minority in the building as well. So mm-hmm. it had all sorts of layers to it. Yeah. And this happened, you know, let's say, I think it happened maybe 12 years ago or so, close to 12 years. But the most interesting thing that I've seen yet in that exact same story is back to Coach Tom Herman. Coach Herman kind of puts a little bit of De La Soul, Ice Cube on his Twitter handle every now and then. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of, but you know, for us old guys, it kind of dates us, right? Because we're mm-hmm. in that 90s hip hop, 80s and so forth. So it kind of dates us, right? Yeah. And so one of the cool things that I've noticed with the University of Texas football now, Coach Herman has a playlist on Spotify.
Oh, wow.
And you want to talk about you want to talk about cultural equity and really digging into the kids. And what they did was on his playlist, it's not just Coach Herman's playlist. He'll have a Remix Monday mixtape that he calls it. So it'll be on Spotify. But then he'll ask the players to create a playlist on Spotify of all the things that they listen to. So you got Meek and Young Jizzy and, you know, you got all these new age musicians on there and artists on the playlist that's created by the college football players. And they're getting like thousands of downloads, and the downloads are all coming from high school recruits or high school kids or, you know, even us old guys who are trying to keep up, right?
Yeah.
With the new wave of music. So I'm downloading it and I'm listening to it while I'm in working out or on a run or something, because now it's energizing me to see where the youth are actually coming from and what their perspective on the music is as well. And now I have kind of a natural connection when I have that conversation.
All right. You made it, Dr. Sampson. I appreciate it. But I want to hear how you address this question. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
All right. So I've kind of been in that situation, and I'm going to speak from fact instead of ideology, right? So first thing I would do is hire the right people. It's paramount that you hire the right people and get the right people on the bus, right? And that kind of goes back to John Gordon's energy bus. So hire the right people. And then as far as resources are concerned, the only resource that I would get would be a $200 Chromebook. And I've done this for a school down in North Carolina. It's in the book Welcome to the Grind in Wilson, North Carolina, rural North Carolina. They don't have textbooks. All they have is a Chromebook, and they're a K-12 blended learning school. So I would get the Chromebook, and the third resource would be making sure that the facilities are up to par. So making sure we have excellent facilities that would rival University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, that will rival Duke. So great facilities, very modern, open space. Now, I'm going to go back to that second point with resource, because we all know resources matter. In North Carolina, we have zero textbook, Chromebook, and the kids performed, when we talk about data-driven, the kids performed in the top 20% in reading and in the top 15% in science and in the top 15% in math in the state of North Carolina. In 3 years, we opened that school up, and in 3 years, that happened. So my priorities would be the ability for kids to think. The textbook is not going to drive the thinking. The textbook's not going to drive the learning. But having a Chromebook, now you have the entire world at your hands, and we have ample resources inside of the internet that will actually spark authentic conversations, spark authentic problem solving, and spark authentic engagement. And that's what I'm after when we speak about resources. So the greatest resource is the ability for kids to think and engage on a level that really matters to them, not on a level that matters to a textbook or even, for this matter, a state assessment.
Well, Dr. Sampson, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
You know, my biggest parting word of advice would be to capture, curate, and share everything that you're doing in your experience. That way folks can learn from it. So the ability to listen to great podcasts like this in this platform and capture other people's stories and curate how you plan on doing that and sharing it out. I think that's going to be important. So you are providing a great resource for leaders throughout the world. So that's my partying component that I think would really help out any leader out there that wants to grow and develop over time. And I appreciate everything that you've done, and your platform is amazing. This is one of the richest resources I've ever seen. And if people want to get a hold of me, they can just follow me on Twitter at Randall Sampson, or look me up on my website, libertyleadershipdevelopment.com, libertyld.com. I'm very easy to get a hold of, and I'll respond to folks because that's all part of leadership, is listening and responding.
Well, better leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast is brought to you by Daniel and Dr. Sampson. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Dr. Sampson in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Dr. Sampson, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better. Better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show, and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.